This podcast is not safe for work and will feature movie spoilers. It will feature scenes described of a graphic nature. It will contain language which most listeners may find offensive. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. I'm your host Duncan McLeish, welcome to the show. Up on this episode, we are doing the first of a four-part series, counting down my top 20 horror movies of 2023. Happy New Year. Yeah, we're officially back. We are rolling with a brand new year's worth of content for you. And I know what you're thinking, technically we've already just dropped an episode and that would be because a cinematic horror movie came out and I went to see it. So yeah, if you didn't check out yesterday's video, we have it available everywhere that you would generally check out these episodes, and you'll hear me talk about Night Swim. But that out the way and pushed to the side, essentially the next four episodes that are released either on this YouTube channel via the podcatcher of your choice or via Spotify and Anchor will cover a countdown of my top 20 horror movies in 2023. Now there's always caveats that follow these, and I will remind you at the start of each episode, and it might get a bit tedious, but bear with me. My top 20 is movies that I saw in 2023 that were either played at film festivals, issued as screeners to me, or were formally released in the United Kingdom. So there may be a title on here that I saw at a film festival that hasn't made its way into more consumable domains for your average viewer. If that's the case, sorry. If it was a screener sent through to me for a American release and it's not been released in the UK yet and I reviewed it, sorry. And if you are out with the UK and the movie is played here but nowhere else, then sorry. So that's the three caveats, really, that we follow when we're doing these countdowns. On this episode, we're doing numbers 20 through number 16. Before we get fully into our reviews, it's probably worth saying that 2023 was an incredibly weird year for horror. I don't necessarily think there was any one standout trend. I don't necessarily think that any one distributor or film company released a bounty of films which would make you think as the consumer, as the viewer, that, you know, that's the avenue we want to go down. I actually think, if anything, 2023 was a surprisingly unremarkable year from horror. Not that we didn't have great movies, we did, and my list will indicate 20 movies that I think, if you haven't seen any of them, or you've seen a few but maybe missed out on one or two from my list, they are worth checking out for sure. But I felt that this year just passed marked a kind of a shift towards no clear direction for horror. In the past, labels like A24 or Blumhouse have really kind of charted a way for this is the path towards what's going to be big and successful. The movies that I think a lot of people expected to be successful turned out not to be as successful. And the ones that I heard very little about actually ended up being some of my favourites. So it was a strange year overall. Now, we did get loads of movies, and truth be told, I viewed 80 titles which were released in 2023. And that was taken into account that a huge portion of the year was spent doing other things other than watching like new horror movies. A lot of these watches have come in the last 2 months, where I've been kind of rounding out my lists. I reduced the amount of reviews that I did in 2023 as well overall, which kind of prompted that kind of last gasp to try and catch up with everyone. So once again, there may be movies that I didn't mention here. I look forward to the comment section for you guys to tell me what movies really stood out for you, what ones you think I may not have seen that would be worth checking out, because as busy as we are, there's always room to watch another horror movie. So with that in mind, welcome to this episode. We are going to count down from 20 through to 16. As always, you'll get a short clip of the movie I'm about to discuss. So here is number 20.
What is this place?
Oh, no.
Ką skulptūrai padarė taip ir užsilenksi, karma ir teisingumas.
Maro, aš su tavim pasilaižiau tam, kad per šitus ateinančius tavo apgailėtumis gyvenimo metus tu turėtum bent vieną momentą, kurio tu galėtum didžiuotis.
In at number 20 is Pensive. This one is directed by Jonas Trukanis. This one played at Glasgow Fright Fest back in March 2023. I believe that this was its European debut at the time, or international. This one is a kind of slasher movie, and it has been renamed, I think, for... It's now released, so it may be available elsewhere now. I think it's called We Might Hurt Each Other. The synopsis for this one is, after classmates destroy life-size wooden folk art statues during a wild high school graduation party at a remote cottage, a mysterious killer starts picking them off one by one. So this one, I actually had little to no expectation at all. I think this one, it's Estonian, or... I want to say it's Estonian. I'm going to say it's Estonian. I'm probably wrong. The reason I'm kind of grasping at straws to remember where it actually came from is due to the fact that the movie itself was being touted as the kind of first horror slasher movie that this country had ever produced. And I knew very little about it. The synopsis for the Glasgow Fright Fest brochure didn't really give much away. And if anything, it actually kind of put me off. It played as the final movie on the first night, which is never usually a great sign. Movies are usually put in there as a kind of, everyone's going to go to the pub, so we'll just play a movie just to keep those that are not going to pubs mildly entertained. And at its central core, it is exactly what the synopsis I read out is being. You have all these different kind of high school dynamics, all these different groups of people who have decided to throw caution to the wind and go out to a cabin in the woods, cause horror, and blow off some steam for their graduation party with plenty of alcohol and all the accoutrement that comes with that. As they go out there, they find that the road up to the cabin and the surrounding area has these kind of hand-carved figurines, these kind of almost totems in the road, which during the night, over many drinks, are slowly vandalised, thus setting into effect a mad slasher killer who starts to wreak vengeance. The reason this comes in at number 20 is, one, for an area of the world that's not necessarily known for slasher horror movies, I think they nailed the brief here on this one. This is a surprisingly fun movie. I think its emphasis on practical effects, particularly in the gore, works really, really, really well. It surprised me at times, like, by how vicious it actually went, and how with spent time with characters, their true selves slowly started to come to the surface. I found that I had allegiances to certain characters earlier on, but when push came to shove, things twisted another way, which made me actually grow to dislike certain characters in a way where, like, facades or masks that we hold to ourselves as being, this is who I am, a bit of bravado, etc., slowly start to fade away or crumble under the pressure. I found the movie was wickedly paced. I found it had a kind of dark sense of humour that certainly played to my sensibilities. And across the board, the acting was good. This was a group of teenagers. I don't know if they're necessarily like established actors or actresses in their home country, but to me, they all did really, really, really well. I kind of got where the ending was going before it arrived, but even then, I felt it stuck the landing successfully without me groaning or kind of lying back on a lilo of, you know, cliches and kind of trite writing. I thought all that hung together. I don't think it necessarily brings anything new to the slasher genre. I don't think if you're seeing this movie, unless you're hella naive or you've just never seen a slasher movie before, I don't think you're walking away from this one going, well, I've seen something I never thought I would see before. But that being said, the ability for this filmmaker in particular to bring together a relatively simple plot and familiar settings to slasher horror fans and actually deliver something with memorable kills, with memorable events, set pieces and characters, says a lot for me. I've only seen this movie once. I saw it in March and I can remember the kills, I can remember the characters, I can remember a huge amount of what actually happened in the movie almost a year removed from it, which to me is a indicator that the movie did something right. I was in a group of people that saw the movie and I don't think they were all as high in it as I was. Some of them, I think, felt that it was maybe a bit meaner than it should have been, or maybe the ending was a bit too on the nose, but for me it hung together. I really enjoyed it, and hopefully you get a chance to see it. Like I say, it's been renamed now. We Might Hurt Each Other, or We're Going to Hurt Each Other, I think is what it's going by now. I know it is Pensive, and you might be able to IMDb Pensive and see if that comes up, but yeah, it is definitely worth a check out. Is it going to set your world on fire? Absolutely not. But is it an interesting outing from a director who's certainly one to watch moving forward? I think so. So number 20 on my list is Pensive. Here is number 19.
So here's what we know for sure. We're dealing with something supernatural. I don't want to say that it's vampires, I don't want to say that it's zombies, I don't want to say that it's demons, but they're definitely not human.
At number 19 is Here for Blood. This is directed by Daniel Torres and it's based on the screenplay by James Roberts. The synopsis for this one is, when his girlfriend Phoebe is swamped with college exams, Tom O'Bannon, a rowdy pro wrestler struggling to make ends meet, agrees to fill in a last-minute replacement for her well-paying babysitting job. Tom arrives at an isolated family home where he meets a precocious 10-year-old, Grace. What starts off as a quiet night of pizza and video games quickly spirals into bloody violent chaos, and Tom and Grace find themselves fighting for their lives when otherworldly cults of masked intruders descend on their home. So this is another fright fest. This came as the second to last movie that played at Fright Fest overall, I think. So this was like day two. If memory serves, my brain from last March is a bit fuzzy. And everyone was saying, you know, if there's one movie that you see, well, actually we're saying if there was one movie you see, it was Onyx the Fortuitous, which may appear later on in my list. But Here for Blood was one that was being touted as, listen, you're going to have a ball with it. And it kind of, like, from what I read, it sounded cheap is what read to me. And even the directors who were at the at Fright Fest pretty much all but said, listen, this is what was made with love, it was made, you know, on the cheap, and we put our heart and soul into it and we hope you enjoy it. And it is like an absolute blast. I think Fright Fest in 2023 put on maybe more kind of comedic movies than they generally would, and I actually think all of them landed. This being the most enjoyable kind of straight down the middle horror comedy out of the lot. I think Onyx, and we'll get to it when it comes around, has a particular sensibility which will alienate a lot of audiences, whereas I think Here for Blood is one that will universally be enjoyed by those that like horror comedies. It has the pro wrestler at centre and the cult of kind of mishaps and well-to-dos that think that they're going to be able to take down this, for all intents and purposes, block-headed pro wrestler. I thought this one was wonderfully funny. I mean, like, the jokes all land. Some of the set designs costume designs for the characters are genuinely creepy. And there was a couple of scenes in this one, particular with movements of a head in a mask, that I found like quite jarring. There's tons of practical effects in this one. A good dose of visual effects as well, kind of CGI, but not overused in a way which didn't fit the tone of the movie. The action scenes are ridiculous and over the top. Imagine the fight scene from They Live between Reddy Roddy Piper trying to force his friend to wear a pair of sunglasses, and you get this, like, what was I think at the time considered the longest fight scene in movie history. This movie is that fight scene all over the place. It's clotheslines, it's suplexes, it's nonsense. And at the core, it has a pretty ridiculous premise. There is a cameo by Dee Snider, he of Twisted Sister fame, which was all over the poster. I'm going to spoil something for you right now. It is a talking role. It is not actually a physical Dee Snider is going to be in the movie. But for them to get that's kind of awesome in my mind. You know, I think they did well with that and they used it well in the marketing. I would totally watch another one of movies from these guys, this team behind this movie here. I would watch anything that involved like a potential sequel on this one because I genuinely enjoyed the characters. It kind of reminded me of the fun that I have when I watch a movie like Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, where it's just, this movie is just designed to make you smile, eat popcorn and watch a ton of blood fly about the place. So yeah, I can't really say much more than that. It is, like, it's a relatively shallow movie. It, you know, it's a bit predictable, yeah, but it is super fun. And I've said many times, I get accused a lot of swaying towards the arty, like, ethereal, esoteric horror movies where you really have to spend about 10 days in a history book to try and unpack maybe what the movie was actually telling you. But there is a time and a place for a movie that you can just switch your brain off, sit back, and enjoy the carnage. And this is definitely one of them. I found Here for Blood one of the highlights of a Fright Fest, which had quite a few highlights in 2023. So much so that I'm kind of looking forward to it landing eventually in a place that I can properly check it out. I know they were struggling to nail down distribution and it was still playing festivals, I believe, towards the end of last year. So we can't be that far away from it making its way to a platform that you can see it on. And Here for Blood is definitely one you should check out. It was my number 19, Here for Blood. Let's find out what made number 18.
Anytime you want to tell me something special about your parents, something funny or sad or anything at all, you just tell me, and I'll keep it safe, and we can listen to it whenever we want. If you should feel alone, or that your world has come apart, just reach out and you'll see, a friend is never very far. Tell me your dreams, I will dream them too. I'm so glad I finally found you.
Number 18 on my list is Megan. This was technically the first horror movie that came out in 2023 in cinemas. It's directed by Gerald Johnson, the guy behind Housebound. And the synopsis for this one is a robotics engineer at a toy company builds a lifelike doll that begins to take on a life of its own. So, Megan, number 18 on the list. This is a Blumhouse movie, and I'll be honest with you, I once again had very little expectations on this one. It kind of looked like, oh, we're just doing the Chucky thing. That'll be interesting. And I found that I thought this was really, really well done. Very campy in bits, but the subject matter kind of leads itself to it. Once again, a movie which is not necessarily reinventing the wheel, but what I will say about it is I actually thought the use of technology on it was really cool. I thought the way it incorporated a lot of what we are struggling with just now in terms of addiction to our devices worked really well. The idea of artificial intelligence and the insidious nature on it kind of feels like it's on the cusp of what we're going to essentially be getting for the next couple of years as AI run amok movies. I would say in a world where maybe the Child's Play remake hadn't already done some of this, I think it would have maybe scored a little bit higher for me. But overall, I think Gerald Johnson is very, very, very good at kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of horror with a dose of that gallows humour, and it's handled very well here. I thought the action set pieces were excellent. The design of the doll as well, the movements, really well done. Now, I think some of that is practical, you know, i.e. someone in a costume. I think some of it is also mechanical as well, and some of it is CGI. And I felt it was flawless throughout. I thought the acting was super strong in the movie. The justification of the way the aunt leans into what she can do to make her now adopted child like happy and acclimated kind of feels, I know I read somewhere saying, oh yeah, you're gonna build a murder doll for the kid you're looking after, and I kind of feel like his parents, we maybe don't build murder dolls, but when you're looking after a kid, you try and do anything to keep them happy, safe and occupied. And if that just happens to be in line with something you're really good at, even if it might be slightly inappropriate, you'll lean into that as a way to get your, you know, to get that kid through. So I found all that really, really interesting. I actually really enjoyed the deaths in this as well, as morbid as that sounds. I thought they were really well constructed. And I just found that, like, this movie moved at pace for me. I found it, like, a lot of fun. So much so that they announced the sequel, which I think is in development at the moment. And this is maybe one of the rare occasions where the idea of a sequel to this movie didn't be met with me with a, you know, like a groan that never ended. I actually thought, you know, you could probably do two or three of these movies and they would be fine. You know, like, and I actually think you could go bigger with the next one in terms of the death and the carnage, and I would be alright with it. I would like to see Gerald Johnson come back and continue his work there. I think this was the first movie from Blumhouse in a wee while where I actually felt like, yeah, just keep doing this shit, just keep plugging away and giving these directors the money to go make their own ideas on the screen, and I'll be kind of happy. And that's a double-edged sword I've already been through, and you may have seen the review for Night Swim, which is a brand new Blumhouse movie that came out in the same window as Megan this year, which I found the exact opposite way. And I'm sure there are people out there that went into that with limited expectations and came out feeling how I felt when Megan finished. Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. It did a lot of things right. Once again, not the most original movie in the world. Kind of hard to get them now. Very on the nose is exactly what you think it is from start to finish, but hugely entertaining. And yeah, a lot of these movies in the back half of the list here made me smile. I came out the cinema smiling at the end of this movie, and I kind of like smiling when I come out the cinema, as glum and dour as I can be. It did all the stuff that made me happy. So yeah, that's really all I have to say about Megan. It's worth checking out. I think everyone and their aunt has now seen this movie. Had a great marketing campaign, made a lot of money as well. But yeah, go check Megan if you haven't, revisit if you haven't. I checked out with my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, earlier on in the year, and she had a ball with it as well. So very much worth your time. Number 18 on my list is Megan. Let's do number 17.
Who is this?
Hello, Samantha. Did you miss me?
I want you to think long and hard about whether you really want to do this, because the last two people that fucked with us ended up dead.
You should be thanking me, Sam. Jason and Greg were gonna kill you and your sister. I gutted them before they had the chance.
So what? You're protecting us now?
Not quite. I'm going to show the world who you really are, a liar and a killer. I'm going to punish you, Sam.
You shouldn't believe everything you read on the internet, asshole.
Don't be cute. You're gonna pay for what you did. And I'm not gonna stop until I butcher you, you and anyone who gets between us. You and Tara better watch your backs.
You better
at
watch
number 17 on the list is Scream 6. This one is directed by Matt Bettelheny Upland and Tyler Gillette. And the synopsis is, in the next installment, the survivors of the Ghostface killings leave Woodsboro behind and start a fresh chapter in New York City. there are going to be some people out there that are like, one, why is number 17 on the list Scream 6? That should be so much higher. It should be like top 5. There are other people out there that are going to be of the opinion that it shouldn't even make a top 20. I would say this is maybe, and I don't know how you guys feel, one of the more divisive Scream installments that I think I've seen. To me, ultimately where I came down was, I think I preferred this one to the previous one, but even then, I think we're still a long way off of the dizzying highs that I like. Now, to give context and perspective here, I'm a person who has over time grown to love chapter number 4. So much so that I might actually put chapter 4 as my second favourite Scream overall behind the original, with number 2 following and after that, then number 5, then number 6, then number 3. I know there's a lot of love for 3, and 3 seems to be finding a lot more love as time has went on. Revisited that movie recently. Still don't understand what's going on with that. But to me, Scream 6 was a kind of mixed bag. I love the characters. I love the concept of the Ghostface Killer. I love the way Scream itself is an opportunity to kind of poke fun at movie fans, trends, the way our scene, as civil as it can be, has a tendency to be pretty dickish towards each other, and will not be happy until we burned everything down that doesn't look, smell, act, or taste like exactly the thing that we like. It can be a pretty unforgiving place, and that brutality actually weighs itself pretty well through the writing in a Scream movie. It gives the moviegoer the opportunity to kind of knowingly wink and nod at the stuff that we know is definitely going to happen, stuff that we suspect is going to happen, and also follow all the cliches. It's also a kind of style of filmmaking and a series that can at times upfront tell you what is going to happen in the opening segments due to themes and techniques that will be borne out later on in the movie, almost like Chekhov's plot device. So, I mean, they're great that way. It was great to see a lot of great, it was great. It was great to see a lot of the recurring characters back. I enjoyed the handing over to the new characters. I thought that was a smart move. Mostly because I kind of feel like Scream should have killed off a lot more main characters by now. And FYI, that opinion hasn't changed by the end of this one. There's still at least one or two main characters that shouldn't be there anymore. I ultimately kind of knocked this one down a little bit, more because I felt the ending was so outlandish. It started to chart back into part 3 territory, where it's so ridiculous when you pull back from it that the plan for revenge is so over the top, it's so ostentatious, it's so ridiculous, it's so huge that at some level it kind of feels like you just kept all that money that you spent doing all that stuff, you'd probably be pretty happy. And if you can disassociate yourself from that, I think you probably enjoy the movie more than I can. I couldn't. I found, like I say, the performance is good. I found the opening segment maybe the weakest in all the Scream movies overall, but I found that it found its voice as it went along and continued to deliver after that. Now, the problem is, I felt it was too long. It was well over 2 hours. And we're now in a situation where part 7 seems like it's going to be in development hell for the next wee while. So I don't know where we go from here. And if this is the last one that rounds out those character stories, I'm kind of fine with that. And if we want to go somewhere else or back to the original cast, I'm kind of fine with that. I also kind of feel like if we never get another Scream movie again, I'm also kind of fine with that as well. It's not the only franchise that has made my list of 20 here that I feel might not need to keep going. Wait for later on. But yeah, I found it enjoyable at the cinema. The more I've thought about it since, maybe less enjoyable. I'm now in a position where, you know, it is what it is. It's nowhere near the lofty highs. It's nowhere near the bottom of the pile either. Probably sits somewhere in the middle, which puts it number 17 on my list. That was Scream 6. And for the final movie in this segment, we are going to do number 16, which is...
You don't look so good, Mom.
Nothing a big ol' hug and kiss from you won't fix. Open up now, like a good girl.
At number 16, and the final movie in this segment, is Evil Dead Rise. This is written and directed by Lee Cronin, who did Hole in the Ground before this. The synopsis for Evil Dead Rise is a twisted tale of two strange sisters whose reunion is cut short by the rise of flesh-possessing demons, thrusting them into a primal battle for survival as they face the most nightmarish version of the family imaginable. So yeah, the number 16 movie and the final one we're going to discuss is Evil Dead Rise. In a world where the Evil Dead remake was not made in 2013, I think this would be the perfect reboot for Evil Dead. In a world where the Evil Dead in 2013 came back swinging hard and delivering tons of practical gore and gnarly effects, this movie feels like a okay follow-up to that. There is a lot to like about Evil Dead Rise. The big thing being it kind of changed the idea of the mythology, opened the world up a little bit more, has maybe one of my favourite cold open beginnings to a movie I think I've seen since the Vanishing Man or whatever that was called. One of the best cold opens. Like, I genuinely saw that sequence and was smiling from ear to ear. The way the movie plays out in a particular way to loop to that, I think is even smarter because it kind of throws the audience in a, that's what's going on. And it also ends up with a cabin in the woods, which could potentially be the thing that sets up the thing in movies before. So this could conceivably be a prequel to The Evil Dead in 2013, or could, in fact, very well could be actually its own standalone thing, and the movie never goes out its way to really lean in and identify that, nor should it. I think it does what the best Evil Dead movies do, which is wickedly make you uncomfortable and also at the same time kind of laugh at bits that are inappropriate too. The effects in this one are top notch. I think they're remake level, and that they're as good as the 2013 remake, which I think had some of the best practical effects in 2013. Some of the best practical effects of the decade, actually, if you're doing the kind of 2010s. Kind of just phenomenal across the board. I like the casting of this, if I'm honest, as well. I thought the casting was very well done. It went darker than I expected it to. The use of some of the scenes and the setups for the kind of demon entries were really, 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 really well done. Like, it like gave me a kind of wry smile on my face. And it, when it needs to get bloody, these movies bloody get bloody. By the end, there's just like torrents of fake blood everywhere, which is kind of what you want from an Evil Dead movie. I know that Sam Raimi really enjoyed what Lee Cronin did on this one, and there's talk of other Evil Dead movies. I don't think we're going to have to wait too long for another Evil Dead movie. I don't think we're going to be waiting another decade between installments. And I actually kind of like the idea of standalone Evil Dead installments now. I think kind of the same way the kind of pitched the idea of, you know, potential future Hellraiser sequels being as standalone entries, or even the way that they kind of thought about doing, after Halloween 3, they had talked about doing different installments that carry on their own story. I think you could do that here any time setting. In fact, the one thing that's confused me the most is why they haven't played with the time setting in Evil Dead, notwithstanding Part 3. Like, you could have like one kind of turn of the previous century, century before that. Like, we could go at any time frame and really like lean into the idea of the Deadites and what would happen in those. So I would like to see more of it. Like, certainly this movie, like I said before, in a world where I didn't have my 2013 kind of modern version of the Evil Dead, this one I think would have scored a lot higher with me but as a property that's been released that continues to show me there is still life in Evil Dead. Like, if I look at that franchise, there's three original movies that I all like for completely different reasons, and some of them love. A remake that I think is super fucking strong, like one of the best remakes of the kind of modern era. A TV show, Ash vs. the Evil Dead, which I think is perfect, and I was sad to see it get cancelled. And a kind of standalone movie that also rocks. Evil Dead might be one of the most solid franchises that has transcended both movie into TV, and back into movies that there's ever been. And Evil Dead Rise is a great example of why it still works and why we should have more of these movies. So at number 16 on my list is, of course, Evil Dead Rise. Which means, counting down from 20 through to 16 on this episode, and number 20 is Pensive, aka We Might Hurt Each Other. Number 19 is Here for Blood. Number 18 is Megan. Number 17 is Scream 6. And number 16 is Evil Dead Rise. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, this first proper episode of the Podcast Under Stairs in 2024. Later on in the week, we'll drop the second installment. It's going to cover movies number 15 through 11 on my list. And then next week, you'll get the concluding two parts, which will cover 10 through 1. As always, if you're checking this out on YouTube, please hit subscribe and give us a like. Leave some comments. What movies did you love in 2023? Is there any that you fear I may have missed? And if so, let me know what they are and I will definitely check them out. If you're checking us out on the Spotify or maybe on the Anchor apps, you're getting the video content as well as the audio content there, then please subscribe to those feeds as well. Answer the question that always pops up at the end of the episodes. And if you're checking this out in its audio form and any of the podcatchers out there, then thank you very much. We love you long time. Please hit subscribe that we get access to the almost 1300 episodes of Podcasts Under the Stairs that there are out there for you to check out. Until I speak to you later on this week, giving you the next installment of this countdown, wherever you are, whatever the time zone is, and whatever you're up to in this big bad world of ours, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from under the stairs, and I am signing off.